Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey guys, before this show starts, just want to let you know that over on Red Men Plus, our subscription service, we've got tons and tons of Liverpool content in podcast form as well. You love podcasts, we love making podcasts. Go and check it all out. That's redmenplus.com. Sign up for as little as £5 a month. You will not regret it. Now, enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome. It's the Match Build-Up Show. Manchester United versus Liverpool next Monday night. Steve Hoy here in the studio with Mick Moran and Andy Bell to have a big old chat about us, the Manx, the situation we're in, the situation they're in, and plenty, plenty more. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this one. If you're watching this on Twitter live now, do click on the link and come over to us on YouTube and get involved in the live chat. If you're not, if you're listening or watching this after the fact, and anything we say or do on the show and you want to comment, do use the Twitter at the Redmen TV. Get in touch, or again, on YouTube, use the comment section. Right then, guys, we might as well get straight into it. First of all, thanks for joining us. Mick, it's the biggest game in English football still. It's the biggest rivalry in English football, but both of these teams are going into it in less than ideal situations. I'd say we're in a tiny bit better of a situation in terms of points, a much better term in terms of the entire club as a whole. But it does feel like, yeah, this is one where both teams are going into this with a few issues.
Yeah, and it's one of them where, like, the start of the season, we're like, right, we need to get into the season nice and strong. Obviously, the Fulham game doesn't go to plan. And then you're going into the Palace game, right, we need to sort out some maybe character issues and maybe working hard in the first game that we'll sort out in the game at Anfield, because it won't stand in front of an Anfield crowd. We do a lot better, but it's conceding those first goals. I think the last time we kept a clean sheet in the league was Newcastle back in April. And I think every Premier League game since then, we've conceded the first goal. She's like, that's something we need to iron out. And I think that's something that, especially when you're missing all the players that we're missing, the Jotters and obviously Mane's gone and stuff, the players that are usually quite good at scoring that first goal and kind of open up the game for us. Since then, obviously, bedding in Nunes. Now Nunes is gone again for 3 games. Bedding in other players like Carvalho's and Elliot coming back from bad injury and stuff like that. We need to like try and get it right. And I think it's hopefully just like a bedding in period, dusting off the cobwebs. First 2 games, obviously we're 4 points behind Man City, and I know there's been a lot of stuff on social media. If you read that too much, then you go a bit insane in terms of like, you're 4 points behind, the season's gone, 36 games left. But we need to fix up very sharp, and I think United is probably a good game to do that. I think,
I suppose, Andy, like, I think making a game at Old Trafford a must win is not where you want to be, because they're crap. They're literally bottom of the league. Yeah. At the time recording, they're going to stay there unless something mad happens over the next few days, where, you know, unless what is it, if West Ham get battered by a decent scoreline, or even Everton, which again probably could happen at some point, like goal difference, but they're probably going to go into that game bottom of the table again, albeit 2 games played. But historically, the recent past, we've done well against them, but it's not an easy ground to go to and have to win. But because you drop points against Fulham, because you drop points against Palace, like, you have to go to Old Trafford and win now, essentially, because another draw or a defeat, and then really, you know, if people aren't panicking, they are starting to panic now. Liverpool have put themselves behind the eight ball a little bit already, and then they've got, like, again, they're a crap team, but it's Old Trafford, it's Man United, it's going to be fiery. It's a less than ideal situation having to go there. You absolutely must win. The third game of the season is now a must win game. It's mental.
Yeah, we absolutely do have to win it. I think when you look at our next 3 fixtures before, I think it's the away derby is first. Certainly normally the away derby first, isn't it? And we've got Bournemouth at home and Newcastle at home after that. I know Newcastle are sort of a little bit different this year, got a few players in, but, you know, those 2 games you definitely expect 6 points from. And, you know, when you look at it purely on a footballing level, you expect 6 points from this. The problem is, I'm of an age, I'm 24, where I was too young to sort of get all the Danny Murphy 1-0 wins, so I don't remember those. But I'm old enough to remember just basically going there and getting beaten twice every season. Yeah, goals going in off, like Wes Brown's back, John O'Shea scuffing them in the last minute, Rio Ferdinand, you know, in the last minute as well. Just remember these over and over and over again. And the first time I ever remember in my life Liverpool winning at Old Trafford was the 4-1 in 2009. That was when I was 11 years old. So I am completely and utterly mentally scarred by Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, probably my behaviours as an adult are in part a lot down to my childhood being scarred by him. So no matter how bad they are on the pitch, you know, they could be in the Vanarama Conference and I would never bank on 3 points. I'll never count 3 points in my head going to Old Trafford, which doesn't make sense because, as you say, they are absolutely dreadful at the moment. They're, you know, in a state of transition. They've got a kind of dogmatic manager coming in there trying to implement his ideas. There seems to be complete resistance from the players on the pitch. There seems to be people at the club where there's a complete power struggle, and it doesn't feel like, you know, Ten Hag is getting, well, he's some players he wants, but I certainly don't think he's the final say in the players coming in there. So it's a complete basket case of a club, but it's 90 minutes, it's 11 men against 11 men, and if they can start quickly and if they can give their fans something to latch on to and get the atmosphere going, then anything can happen, Manchester United versus Liverpool.
On that, Mick, Andy's right, there's a lot going on. So there's a plan, apparently Man United plans, they're going to protest against the Glazers, which, fair play, I don't blame them, by the way. I know a lot of people say, yeah, you've spent loads of money, but there's a lot of issues at Man United where they've got every right to protest. The ground's falling apart, you know, the dividends, I understand it. There's loads going on. On the pitch as well, they're an absolute shambles, and it's going to be a fiery atmosphere. What Liverpool needs to do is make it fiery against Man United, because if they're going into the ground in a bad mood, and I remember protesting against Hicks and Gillette a couple of times, and then you go into the ground and almost subconsciously you take it out on Liverpool, the players, and Liverpool, this ground, and everything. Oh, lots of anger. That's what Liverpool need to do, because if Man United start well and Liverpool look a bit rubbish, all that emotion that they've got built up focuses on us, and that can be a really hostile place to go. Liverpool's aim, you're right in saying we started better against Palace, is to make sure that basically becomes a horrendous place for their own players to be, because it hasn't been great for a while. Old Trafford, they are starting to get on, you know, there's boos, Harry Maguire getting booed, things like that. Liverpool need to be careful that we don't get transitioned onto us. Let's start well and make sure that all that animosity, they've just been arguing outside about the owners, they're moaning about who they signed, who they haven't signed, let them in fight, and we'll just kind of stand back from it.
It's like watching a burning building. You want to just go and add more fire to it at this point. And I, like with Andy's point, like I'm 32, so I've seen, like, my childhood was ruined by that club, and obviously I saw the Danny Murphy stuff and all that, and it's like, but it's never, even if we would have won our first two games by a landslide, 4-0 each game, this game comes up, you're still like, oh, what the hell, Old Trafford, do you know what I mean? It's one of those games that you never look forward to. And I think, like, you're right, Steve, like last year we went there with a game plan, and it was perfect. We just battered them from the off, and that's what we need to do. We need to absolutely pepper them from the off. Like, obviously it depends who plays for them, but like the likes of Harry Maguire and stuff. And I think if Bobby's fifth, which I'm sure we'll come on to, then you can pick up those positions and you can just drag them everywhere. Because yeah, Maguire, we've seen in the game last year, he was just getting dragged from pillar to post, and he didn't enjoy it. Same with Luke Shaw. I think he's not in the greatest form as well, to say the least. But yeah, it's going to be one of those. Like, we need to get in and, like you said, like just start like as like a house on fire, and make sure that the system that we're playing and the like the instructions Klopp gives are carried out to the letter instantly. Because I like going into the Palace game, I was like, we need to get a fast start here,
and we did,
but we didn't deliver in terms of getting that goal, and that's what it comes back to, what I said before, like getting the first goal. And I think if we get a goal like we did last year early, then we're sound. But it's if we don't and it carries on and their fans start to get a bit of hope from that, and we're feeding it because we're not getting any goals, and it's that catch-22 situation that you want to obviously avoid going into this game.
Absolutely. On that, Andy, this is what I was thinking. Watching them get humiliated by Brentford was really funny. It was embarrassing how bad they were. Actually, it was like Sunday League at times. My worry after, because I'm like you, this football club have scarred me deeply, Manchester United. I am very much, even when we're like up here and there, down there, I'm always looking in the rearview mirror. Is that, Was that like ground zero? Was that bottomed out? Is that as bad as it gets? Yeah. And now, has he already realised 2 games in? Because there's talk he's already going to make changes. Like, Varane might come back in. There's talk of Martinez maybe going into midfield. There's tons that he's fixing. It's like, are they going to try and just like dog out a point? Because if they come and try and play footy against us, we'll win. I'm convinced of that. Because we'll just take the ball off them and score. If they do what Palace did and try and park a bus, they might have a bit more success. If they play like Fulham, where they don't really try and play out, but they run. They've got half a chance. My worry is that he's looked at how bad they've been against Brentford and Brighton and thought, I'm not sure these lads can play the footy I want. Is he going to change it right now? He's had over a week to do it. Or is he going, no, I need, this is what I want. It's almost a way of saying, like, I need new players. Like, showing the board, I need new players. That's my worry, is that he's had 9 days now. Is he going to just basically play the counter-attacking game? Or is he going to go, no, I'm Erik ten Hag, here's what I want to implement, I'm going to stick with it. Because we went through this with Brendan, yeah. Remember, early teaming yeah. problems, and Brendan played through it. I hope ten Hag does yeah. that, but the worry is, does he just go, fuck this, I can't get beat 3 games in the run, I'm going to have to just park a bus, yeah.
I think that probably the ideal, not the ideal, but the perfect comparison under Brendan was that third game of the season where we played Arsenal, Arsene Wenger's Arsenal, and we got murdered. Absolutely murdered all game.
Plays off the pace.
What everyone said, that was at Anfield as well. And what everyone said was basically, yes, that's a team that's 20 years down the line in their cycle, and we're a team that's 3 games down the line. You know, Erik ten Hag's come from Ajax. It's a very sort of dogmatic club. There's set principles on how to play football. You don't deviate from them. You don't, go into a different game. Okay, yes, there's individual different like things you can do in terms of your triggers to press or whatever. They can change. But in terms of what the actual football you play, you're not going to deviate from that. And that sort of comes from Cruyff's philosophy. And I believe he's very much in that mould. And it's going to be extremely tempting for him to maybe play a little bit more like Crystal Palace did, or to deviate from it a little bit and save himself, you know, potentially an absolute hammering like we get last year. But if he really wants to build something at Man United, and he really wants to actually turn it round, and if they are giving him the assurances, which I'm not sure if they are, because I say they're a mad, mad club at the moment, but if they are giving him those assurances that you actually have 3 years and you can lose the first 7 games of the season and we're going to stick with you, which is the right thing to do, by the way. It genuinely is the right thing to do, and if there's any sense, they'll do that with him. Then, you know, I don't think he will change his ways. But, Mick makes a point there about last year. He's absolutely right. Like, we murdered them last year, and there's so much in that game. There's so many similarities in the sense that going into that game, everyone was going on about their running stats and how they're not pressing, how the players aren't working hard, and how their attitude's bad. And they come out and try and press us, and we just murder them. We play around them, and Naby Keita is a great game that day. You know, and it's sort of the same things happening now. So if they do come out and they do sort of go for it, well, yes, you know, they'll look at the fact that we've conceded the first goals in so many of these games, and they'll think, well, we can get that, and that'll give them a little bit of hope. But it could go the other way, like it does last year. And I think, partially, you know, last year was like a mental block being relieved for us in terms of our record at Old Trafford. But I actually think the 4-2 in the pandemic was a massive mental block relief, because even though there were no supporters there, it seemed that, you know, there was a similar gap in terms of where Liverpool were and where Man United were before, under Ole or under Mourinho or under Van Gaal, and they still dogged out a result. You know, like that season where we win the league and we win our first like 25 games, but the one draws against them. You know, typical. It was always going to happen. You know, we beat much better teams. But that can always happen. That's always in the back of my head. And I hope that kind of that is the mental block relief now, and it will just be a regular football match. And, you know, there's loads that we need to put to one side. What's going on off the pitch for them, their supporters, we need to quieten their crowd, use it as negative energy rather than positive. So there's a lot for Klopp to think about. And before you even talk about the team and the players that are out, I suppose.
I was about to say, in part two, we'll speak about what we think about Liverpool, and we'll obviously pick up Levens, and the lads will pick their Betmate team as well. But I want to focus on Man United here, Mick, and I'll be honest, we could do an entire 2 days on this because there are so many storylines. I'm speaking to Mark Goldbridge a bit later for our pub preview on Red Men Plus. I think I've got like half an hour with him, and honestly, I could do 2 days because there's so much going on. The bigger things I want to talk about, again, off the field and the transfers, I'm going to leave that for now because, by all accounts, if they sign anyone now, it's probably too late for them to be registered by tomorrow afternoon to play in here. So we'll see how it goes, but even then, the issues they've got is that he's trying to implement a style of football and he hasn't got the players to do it. So he's got a goalkeeper who can't come off his line and can't kick. He's got a defender he's trying to play high line with who can't turn round. Harry Maguire's good at what Harry Maguire's good at. It's just a limited skill set. You mentioned Luke Shaw before, struggling. The right back's not, there's nothing going on really. He's still got Fred and McTominay. He's tried Christian Eriksen up front and then he plays him as a DM. He's got nothing is working for them. Like Bruno Fernandes looks a shell of a man. He looks like a guy, the opposite of some footballers really hated lockdown. He feels like just a lockdown footballer. He had an amazing year when there was no one there, and then since then he's gone. They've got so many issues, it's hard to pinpoint any of them. But starting off that, I want to talk about the playing out, because we saw how they conceded against Brentford. It was embarrassing. It was so bad. They will have obviously worked on it. Erik ten Hag is not an idiot. He'll have spent them all week going for it. But my hope is here, if Liverpool can do even 70% of what Brentford did to them, and we're more than capable of. They haven't got the players to do that. We could make a show of them if they try it again.
Yeah, and you say like they've had a week, but I don't think a week's long enough.
Yeah, they need new players.
They need
had them back in training the day after. You had them running up, you know, doing all this, which, you know, you can understand it from maybe 40 years ago. I'm not sure it's the best sort of thing to do with these sort of mercenary footballers now.
Yeah, just run 5 laps of the field, lads. You'll be sound. Don't worry, we'll be all right. But yeah, it's one of them. Yeah, we've been through it. We've been through like all these trials and tribulations, and we've came through it, and we're now flourishing, doing really well. Obviously, first two games of the season, albeit they weren't the best, but like under the Klopp here, in majority, we've been really good, and we've got a set style and a set way. And I agree with you, Andy. Like, they can't. I don't know if they can deviate from that too much in terms of long term, but short term, maybe they should. Maybe they should just go right. Well, we're going to get pressed to hell here. Let's just smash it as far as we can. Play, they're going to play Ronaldo, knockdowns and whatever else, but like it's whether that's going to work, and hopefully it won't. And it's one of those things, like they've got so, like you said, Steve, they've got so many issues. I'm sure Klopp will be telling the players, like, let's not get bogged down in them, let's not think about anything about that. If we play, even like you said, if we play like 70% the way Brentford did, or we play the similar way that we did against Palace, and we get that first goal nice and early, then we'll cause carnage, and that's what we want. And it's trying to block out all that outside noise, which I know it's more difficult now with social media and stuff, when you're getting all the, we're going to do a protests, and you're seeing like people are like, oh, get rid of Ten Hag, and you're just like, it's just ridiculous, like in terms of longevity with a, if you want your team to flourish, you need some familiarity in terms of like keeping the same manager. Obviously, they need a lot of new players. That goes without saying. But yeah, I think we just need to forget about all that and just like, yeah, the Palace game was better than the Fulham game. Dust off those cobwebs, go again, go to Man United and just absolutely smash them. And I think that's hopefully the plan, and then just pile more misery on them.
Right, guys, got your thinking hats on. All you guys who are watching live in the YouTube chat, get involved with this one. It's a bit of a wordy, long sentence, but you'll get the gist of it in a minute. We've played two games against teams managed by Erik ten Hag. Both Ajax, we beat them 1-0 in both games. In Amsterdam, it was an own goal that won that game for us. Tagliafico, I think it was, with the own goal. Do you guys know who scored the Liverpool goal in the 1-0 win at Anfield? Don't tell me if you do, but we beat them 1-0 at Anfield. Erik ten Hag's Ajax in 2020. Who scored Liverpool's goal in that game? We'll be back after this break. Get your answers in the chat now. We got to see if the guys know as well. We'll be back in a moment. It feels like you've spoken to a wide range of people.
Well, we did. We spoke to Steve Rotherham, who was really good. We spoke to Andy Burnham as well, as a Mancunian mayor and an Everton fan. And Steve was great, recalling the 1977 FA Cup final. He said, well, he said, we were beaten by two, and he uses a very bad word to describe the goal. He said, and you must quote me directly on that. But it does involve a player and a manager, but one of my favourite stories was told by Phil Thompson. And Phil was absolutely great. I mean, when he was talking about the good times for Liverpool, his face was wreathed in smiles. And when he was talking about the bad times, it was grimacing, typical Phil. And he said this story about when Liverpool had been knocked out in that 1999 game, and Gerard Houllier had arranged them to go away for a few days to play a local team somewhere in France. And they flew out from Manchester Airport. When they got to Manchester Airport, bad luck would have it, they were met by Manchester United flying out to a Champions League quarterfinal, and obviously accompanied by an awful lot of their fans. Of course, they see Phil, who they recognise as Soccer Saturday, massive symbol of Liverpool, the fan who came from the Kop and played. So, of course, they get stuck straight into Phil. Phil said, I should have said nothing. I should have stood back. And then he said, but you know me. And he said, he started tearing into them. You know, we've won this, we've won that, you haven't. You? He said, I shouldn't have done it. He said, but I couldn't help myself. But he said, on a more serious point, he said, it was one of the worst times of his career at Liverpool, because it came home to him just how far ahead of it, of Liverpool United were. And he said they then went and lost to this team of locals in France. And it sort of crystallised all the thoughts himself and Gerard Houllier had about rebuilding Liverpool, the pain of what they'd suffered at the airport, the pain of the defeat to these local guys, sort of French third division team when they won away. They came home, they decided to rebuild the team. Hippier, Henshaws, all those era of players came in. So out of that pain came the success of the treble of Liverpool won in 2001. And it was just seeing Phil's face describing it all. And also in your mind's eye, you can see Phil thinking, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. I'm saying something. I'm tearing into them.
Yeah, welcome back. That is a clip from my Liverpool Library interview with Phil McNulty and Jim White, speaking about the rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester United. They've got a new book out called Red on Red. It's fascinating. Like I say, that entire interview, about 40 minutes of it, is streaming now on Red Men Plus, our subscription service. So yeah, if you're relatively new to supporting Liverpool and you don't quite know the historical impact of why we hate the Manx so much, definitely go and check that out over on Plus. Yeah, some great content on there, but those two guys, two amazing journalists, they really dug in, spoke to every single person you can think of related to the two clubs. So yeah, go and check that out. Yeah, before the break, I asked about the trivia question. It was basically who scored Liverpool's goal against Ajax's Erik ten Hag's Ajax in the Champions League at Anfield 2020. You guys, we were speaking about, you think you both got it?
Yeah, we think so anyway.
Go on.
We can picture the goals you've set at the same time. 3, 2, 1, Curtis Jones.
Yeah. By the way, that Mick give you a second lead.
Because I was just saying before, just in the break there.
Right, like, under the bus.
I remember the Nicol Williams cross, and I'm like, who was on the end of it? Yeah, like, so, and then it came to me, Curtis Jones.
Basically.
That qualified us that night as well. So, you know,
Keller had to go and goal out of nowhere, but yeah, any. Nico Williams, back post ball, Curtis Jones tapped it. Anana just left it.
I think what's his name?
Right, Alan Shearer. Anana just left it and Curtis Jones. I got a few shout outs, a couple of people in the chat got it. First up was Banana Drama, well done to you. Hans, Zalatan, Ollie Reds got it. Hakal as well, loads of, so yeah, maybe it was an easy question. It was Curtis Jones at the back post. Yeah, Ajax 2020 in front of an empty Anfield back in that horrendous, horrendous season. The less said about lockdown season, the better. Right then, we just spoke about Man United and the bazillion issues they've got, and a lot of it seems to be the players are crap. Liverpool's main issue at the moment, Andy, is that they're not playing great. They're not crap players. Some of them are in bad form, and loads of them can't get on the pitch at the minute. There's even rumours today about maybe Virgil's got a knock. I've seen that floating around. Charlie has put a super chat in. Rumours that Van Dijk's got a knock as well. I haven't heard that yet. We'll see. Jürgen's got his press conference on Friday. We'll see. But as it stands, we don't know about that. But what we do know, I'm going to bring up the EPL injury table on the screen for those watching. For those listening along, I'll read some names out. Thiago, Jota, Jones, Matip, Kelleher, Firmino's a doubt. Oxley, Chamberlain, Konate, Ramsey, all out. Of course, Darwin Nunes suspended as well. This is the issue we've got at the minute, Andy. It's slim pickings, and there's lads who are in form who I imagine Jäger wouldn't mind rotating out if he had the choice, but he hasn't got the backup players to do that at the moment. There's a lot going on in terms of injuries. The biggest one, of course, is now up front. No Jota, definitely no Nunes. We know that he just nutted someone. If Bobby Firmino can't play, like, Liverpool have got a decision to make there, haven't they? Hopefully Bobby can. Again, we'll wait and see. Jürgen said, we'll see. That was his exact quote. But if he can't play, what would you see him doing? My guess was Carvalho plays somewhere in that front three, whether he goes in number nine like he did in that stupid friendly that we played the day after the Charity Shield, or maybe he goes on the wing and you stick Mo up front. Maybe you stick Harvey on the right and you stick Mo up front. Either way, it's not ideal, the third game of the season. We might have someone in up front who isn't a natural striker.
Yeah, first of all, like, on a really, really basic level of analysis, and I apologise for this, but it's really, really annoying that they've got a centre-half who's 5'9",
and our big lad,
massive striker has just been out for three games, yeah. You know, and from what you actually read about the Lisandro Martinez fella, he actually, apparently last year, albeit in the Eredivisie, had a better aerial success rate than Harry Maguire, so he seems to be actually quite decent in the air. And, you know, look, we watched Lucas Leiva, for example, play centre-half for Liverpool quite a bit, and I thought he did really, really well in cup finals and everything. He wasn't the biggest lad, albeit I think he was a little bit bigger than what Martinez is. But if you look at those players who are out there, you've obviously got the three main choices for central striker. You've got Nunes, you've got Bobby, and you've got Jota. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about pressing them, and, you know, albeit Martinez is supposed to be a good ball playing centre half, his confidence is shot, he got hooked at half time against Brentford. Maguire, we know, is pressable. We've obviously seen Eriksen and the mistakes they made playing out. I think the one sort of saving grace from that is that, you know, Bobby and Jota, you'd certainly say, are two best pressers in terms of that central role. Nunes is probably third in that, and he's still learning everything. But, you know, let's say Firmino is out, you could still sort of pick a front three of Diaz, Salah and Elliot. And, you know, Diaz and Salah are always in the front three. They're always pressing. They know what to do. And I think Harvey Elliott, quietly, everyone always goes on about his technical ability, and his technical ability is marvellous. But if you actually watch him as counter-pressing and all the things you need to do in a Klopp midfield, he's brilliant at that as well. So I have no qualms with him playing on the right in terms of that.
Who goes up front?
It would be Mo down the middle in that case, yeah. At the same time, you know, Soccer Value come on the other night. Emily gets, what, 15 minutes probably, including added time. But he looks after the ball. He looks after the ball so well, man. Like, he's so, so good at that. And, like, engineering his way out of tricky situations and just recycling things and getting us up the pitch. So, like, he's a shout for that as well. And then it's a question of, I guess it's difficult with the left-hand side of midfield. That's the issue, isn't it? Because, you know, Henderson, more than happy to trust him in the right. Elliot, more than happy to trust him in the right. But, you know, the one time they played together in that midfield, when Henderson was on the left against Chelsea, he had a really poor game and didn't play well at all. So, you know, it's how do we fit them both into the team? You could talk about a 4-2-3-1. I think your two in that case is Fabinho and Henderson.
He's just never started games with it. Very rarely. He just doesn't like it.
Funny enough, the only time he probably did it was City away in the COVID season, wasn't it? He plays the four up front.
Because Jota had just got that trick. Yeah. He didn't have the bottle to drop any of them, basically. That's the other option is that you just go L11, I suppose. Making do just pick all four forwards. But someone in the chat there said you could even put Diaz up front and maybe put Fabio on the left. I just don't know. It just feels odd to me, like, You're moving Salah and Diaz, to me, just seems counterproductive. It's almost like, it's a bit like when we had no centre-half, so we moved the midfielder back and then you've made two problems. Why don't you just keep your boss wingers? And if it means someone filling in up front and doing a job, then kind of, so what? I remember he stuck Gini Wijnaldum up front, didn't he, in the new camp. It didn't really pay off for us. He actually did all right. Mm-hmm. But that's my thing, is that if you move Salah inside, you're making him play somewhere he doesn't probably want to play, and then you're making a new hole over there. It's sliding doors. It might just be better, as I was saying, to Fabio Carvalho, just go and do your best Bobby Firmino impression for as long as you can, and we'll cross that bridge when you get to it. But yeah, the striker issue is Liverpool's main thing going into this game. Obviously, we haven't got anyone who can play there at the minute.
Yeah, I think it's one of them. Like, you do like you said there, Steve, and play Carvalho, and then you ask Diaz and Carvalho to interchange in game, because obviously they're both in game. They can do that. I think, like, yeah, you could bring Salah in and be a striker, which he's more than capable of doing, and playing Harvey Elliott on the right. But then it's like, it depends who he goes in midfield. I know we'll probably come on to that, but like if he goes Keita, Fabinho, Hendo, then he might just go, right, Harvey Elliott deserves a chance to stay in the team. He's going to go right wing. We'll push Salah inwards and try and keep as many of the like you said, see, the players that in the natural positions, keep them there as much as we can, because obviously we're going away to Man United. We don't want to be moving too many of those pieces, because that's when it starts falling down, when you start, especially when we're not in the greatest vein of form in the last two games. We need to have players in the best position to kind of get the best out of us and to cause as much mayhem as we can on Man United. So yeah, I think I hadn't thought of just throwing Carvalho in and just going, just do your best. And I think that's a good shout, to be fair.
But he didn't do it in that Strasbourg game. I saw him do it again, he wasn't great. I think why he went there, I think again it was a need. Mustafa Friendly was arranged for get everyone fit, and then they were all injured, so we kind of had to hodgepodge a team together. But he did play there. He's had a little bit of tiny experience, albeit again didn't do great. It's a difficult one. Let's move on to midfield, because you brought it up. I'll start with you then, Andy. If I'm picking this team, and spoiler alert, my bet me team's going to come in a little bit later, like Naby Keita, I know there's been a lot of drama about him in the last 24 hours, so reports in Germany saying he wants to leave, our very own Neil Jones kind of disputing that a little bit, and anyone who is a Redmen Plus subscriber, Jano Insight with Neil is streaming on Plus again, and Neil kind of spoke about the information and where he's got, what's happening with Naby. It looks like Liverpool want to keep him, but we'll see. He's the first name on this team. She's in my midfield. Now I'll box the other two off later, but Naby, for the press, for how good he was there last season when he ran rings around them. If he's fit and available, which we presume he is, he was on the bench the other day, and his head is in the right place again with all this speculation, for me, he has to start. Because I think if we are going to try and press Man United off the pitch, he's our best midfielder in terms of doing that. And also, like I say, he got the goal there last season. If there are going to be spaces to exploit, he's the best at doing it, I think, especially with no Thiago available. If Keita's fit, for me, I don't know if you agree, like he should be in the team.
No, I do agree, and it's obviously all the caveats, as you say, as long as his head is in the right place. And I think, you know, there was a lot of fume about him not coming on the other night, and you know, he's warming up and we're 1-1, and you know, you'd think that he's one of our more attacking midfielders. You certainly look at that bench and you think, if we're making five subs and we need a goal, you can bring Naby on, and okay, he might not score it himself, but he can engineer it. And I think when you look at that game and you maybe watch it back, you know, Crystal Palace by that point very much sort of played for the draw, even when it went to that. I thought they'd maybe try and exploit the spaces, but you know, there was no real opportunity for Keita to do what he does best. They weren't really wanting to hold on to the ball, so you can't really press a team that don't want to do that. Yeah. And there was no real to dribble past, because everyone was kind of just pushed right the way back. So I don't know how effective he would have been. That said, this opponent in this game, and you talk about horses for courses, completely the opposite. You know, you'd like to think they're going to come out and have a go, especially at home, otherwise their fans are going to get in their back. So there are going to be those spaces for Keita to break into. And you know, you look at that and you think as well, obviously, with the teething problems with them playing it out in terms of possession. You know, if you've got a front three that can press, and then you've got sort of Keita and Henderson, which is probably what I would go for if I'm going for that formation, then, you know, you could very, very easily get on top of them. And I think it's difficult because, you know, you mentioned earlier the conceding the first goal in every game. And I think you look at the last two and we're very different in how they go. First goal against Fulham was because it got on top of us, you know, played in the front foot and absolutely deserved it. First goal against Palace, we actually play really well and they just get us in the break, you know. So it's not necessarily the same thing happening every time. Fulham can be put down to a poor start. Palace, I don't think there's anything you can really do to impact that. So it's a difficult one. We think they're going to come out, and it's how do you kind of ride that wave? Do you sort of get through it and keep your structure, or do you sort of fight fire with fire? And if you're doing sort of the latter there, I think Keita is one of your first names in the team sheet, to be honest.
I agree. And on that, make like, again, I think Liverpool have got one of the issues we've had at this start, at the poor start, relatively poor start to season, is that Fabinho hasn't been playing well. He's had two, I think he was really poor at Fulham and he wasn't great against Palace. The, you know, he usually sniffs that danger out 10 times out of 10, but Eze just spun him like a top, basically. And then they one pass forward and the next minute Wilfred Zaha has 3-1 goal. You could use Henderson as a number six. If you think you're going to be completely on the front foot and you just want that, you get it. But again, then who plays in the midfield? Then you're going, you're almost doing Henderson, Keita, and then one of Elliott or Milner. Don't see it. I think, again, Liverpool have got a few issues they need to solve. One of them definitely is they need to get Fab back into form. Jürgen tends to try and play players back into form rather than he'll just keep going until they kind of clicks. I've got a feeling that's what he's probably going to do. But again, Liverpool were better against Fulham when Hendo went there. Hendo himself's in iffy form as well. So the midfield is a conundrum, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of options, albeit we're missing quite a few of the big ones. Obviously, Thiago is our main player and a lot of the play goes through him, so missing him's huge. But yeah, Fabinho was one of them. Like, he historically a bit of a slow starter in terms of the league, and he gets into it. And I think, like you said, Klopp's a player, is a manager that he'll keep playing him until they get into form. But I think it's one of them, with Fabinho, if he's not in the greatest form. I thought the Palace game, I thought we'd see Hendo in the six. I really did, because I thought it was a game where
then you might have, Jürgen did say, didn't well, he? Hendo had the issue, didn't he, that he couldn't start. Maybe we were going to see that.
Well, exactly. I think Hendo would have, because I don't think you need a specialised defensive midfielder against Palace at home, because we're obviously going to be on the majorly on the front foot. And I think it's one of them, obviously, sports scientist and whatever, and obviously injuries dictate what we can pick, and that's unfortunately where we're at the minute with all the injuries like you mentioned before, Steve. So I think it's one of them. Fabinho has got to start, I think, in the current climate and where we're at. It just depends, like I said, Naby Keita on that left definitely starts, because just because of last year, because obviously he's done so well. Obviously the whole contract situation kind of broke over the last 24 hours, hasn't it, that he's not happy and stuff. Whether he's in the right headspace or not, we'll see. If he gets picked, then he's fine. I think that's just the way it is. If he's on the bench again, then obviously loads is going to be made of that again in terms of what's going on, because he didn't come on. He was on the bench against Palace, didn't come on, and I was kind of going, what's going on here? Something else.
Yeah, I think our setup in possession, I think, is going to be very different against United than it is against Palace. Now, you're taking a risk and you play Palace, because I think they're one of the best counter-attacking teams in the league, and the players like Zaha and Eze have just so much quality. But the way we set up, and it was interesting, I read a quote in that Linders book where him and Klopp talk about their dream one day, and the way Guardiola always talks his dreams to play with 11 midfielders, and they said their dreams to play with two defenders and eight attackers. And you sort of see Trent and Robertson taking up these number nine positions, and Milner and Elliott are very much detached from Fabinho in terms of playing in between those lines. And I think Fabinho, they'll love to keep him sort of in the centre to cut out any counterattacks. I think when we're building up from the back, you always see Thiago dropping in or Milner dropping in to get the ball, rather than what other teams do when they drop their number six in between the centre halves. So that surprised me the most, that he got done for that Eze goal. The fact that he goes out, really, knowing that Milner and Elliott are caught so far up the pitch and he drops them back. So that surprised me. I actually thought he did quite well apart from that. But as bad as Manchester United are, you know, you give Sancho and Rashford space to run into, that's one way to get their confidence back up. You give Bruno Fernandes space to play, that's one way to get his confidence back up. And I certainly think the midfield structure needs to be tighter against Man United than it was against Palace.
Yeah, I think I would go with Fab. You've got to bank on eventually just play better. Effectively, that's kind of the way we're gonna move on to it.
Yeah, and on the Fabinho thing, I think if he's like you mentioned the Eze, and Eze done really well in that scenario to get to bring the ball down, take on two, and then play the ball through. But if Fabinho's in form, he gets that ball.
Or he fouls him.
He does something that he didn't do. I think it's any other option that he'll do that when he's in top form. It's one of them. He's not at the moment, but it'll come eventually. And it's just one of them, like, it might be Monday night. And if it's Monday night, then we're like, yeah, here we go. Here's Fabinho. He's back. And that's why we picked him.
He was brilliant in the Charity Shield against the Man City team. So he's clearly not sort of lost ability overnight. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So now, your 11s for the game, we've kind of gone through it. Am I right in saying as a collective, Ali, Trent, Virgil, Gomez, Robbo, Fab, Hendo, Naby,
yeah,
Diaz, Salah, and then you're thinking Harvey Elliott's going to be in your team because you've picked him, so maybe you're picking him on the right of the three.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. I think so,
yeah.
Unless Bobby's fit, of course. If Bobby's fit, then Bobby just plays.
Exactly.
I would be dead tempted if there was one sort of change he was making, and I would go for that team. That would be my team. But if he was to go for the 4-2-3-1, like Fabinho, Henderson's definitely your two there. That's a good way of getting them into the team and doing the things that you need them to do in the midfield. And then I would put Carvalho in the number 10. I would do.
As a 4-2-3-1?
Yeah.
I like Carvalho. I think there's a lot about him. Not only does he look like Bruno Mars, he's got a little going for him as well. Yeah, the issue here is that it's what's annoying me, Mick, like going back to, is that if it was our best team, we'd just snot these and it wouldn't even be close. The fact that I am just desperate for Roberto Firmino to just be on ice, and even if he can only give you an hour, just get an hour of Bobby on the pitch, get whatever you can, wring him dry. Don't even worry about what comes down the line. We'll sort Bob when we get there or whatever, but we really could do him if he's not there, and there's all these issues. And again, in midfield, like Pajac going for Milner, I kind of get it, because on form, he's probably the best. Him and Elliott are the two best Premier fielders in terms of form this season. Fab, like we mentioned before, Hendo's been up and down. Thiago's now out injured. Curtis out injured. Ox out injured. You can see why. You can see why everyone's asking for the midfielder. And the Sander Berglings came out this morning, didn't he? I wouldn't be shocked if Jürgen started Milner. He's done it before, like big games. If he thinks it's going to be a hostile crowd and, you know, just get his experienced players on the pitch, I don't think he would pick Henderson and Milner. He might, but there's a chance he starts one of them for sure. I mean, and there's a chance he leaves Hendo out and goes Milner. I don't think that's beyond the realms of possibility. What were your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, right? I said Milner's been terrific, to be honest, in terms of like he's had so many games to play. Ideally, we wouldn't want him to be doing that, but just because we're at the stage where we are with so many injuries, he's had to come in, and obviously he's been tremendous, to be fair to him. But I think the Bobby thing, I'm hoping with Bobby that he's been kept out for this reason, for the Man United game coming up. Obviously, it was a precautionary injury, so we don't know what that is or how long it's going to be. But I'm hoping it was kind of like, because Klopp got asked, didn't he, like, you've picked Nunes, why is that? And he kind of just said, well, I've got no other strikers.
And now he's out.
Well, exactly. And I'm hoping that he had that this game in mind, that if, like, obviously, if Nunes plays well, then it's fine. If he doesn't, obviously, it went as bad as it could in terms of getting sent off and being out for three games. But Bobby had a bit of a rest and he can come back in for this one and be a bit fresher. But I just want Bobby, like, it's difficult because he keeps picking up these injuries, and we know we want him to get back to that stage where he was so good for us and like the perfect link in that false nine role and stuff, and dropping in deep and just like p- picking people to pieces, but it's getting him back up to a stage where he's playing really well and he has these injuries again. It's like, it's hard to see him get back to that level that he was, because he was exemplary and he was the first name on the team sheet in terms of what we were all about. So I'm hoping like this bit of a break in between the United game can help him and we can put him straight in. Yeah, but yeah, it all depends on thing is, like, I think he'll just go like back four, what is it, midfield, what we got going to go with, and then you fit in the informed players around the already regimented system and who's going to go into the lineup anyway.
Fingers crossed Bobby's fit. If he's not, we'll see how it goes. If you're not watching live, let us know in the comment section or on the socials who would you put up front in the front three along with Diaz and Salah. I'm pretty sure all of us will be picking. If you're not, then God knows who's playing up front for you lads or ladies. Let's have a little look around the Premier League then. What else is happening this weekend apart from the biggest game in English club football? Spurs host Wolves early on Saturday. Everton looking for their first points of the season, host Moneybags Nottingham Forest. God knows who's playing for Forest by the time that one comes around. Leicester Southampton just feels like a draw already. Fulham Brentford, which is actually a derby, I found out not that long ago. Fair play, I realised this not too long ago. I've got a mate who's a Fulham fan who told me he hates Brentford and I couldn't get my head around it. Apparently it's a derby. Palace Villa, Bournemouth Arsenal, West Ham Brighton Leeds, Chelsea Newcastle City, and then obviously our game. In terms of, let's talk City at Newcastle then, because this is the oil derby, not even oil classico or something, Andy, I don't know what we'll call this one.
I've heard that one before now.
No, that just comes to there. So it's probably been used before. I've probably heard it somewhere and just stolen it, but I'm taking credit for that one. But again, we are desperate for somebody to do us a favour already, which is crazy. But like, I don't know, maybe Eddie Howe's Newcastle on a Sunday afternoon are the ones who might be able to help us out. I don't envisage it, but who knows? That, again, we're back to hoping, aren't we, a little bit here?
Yeah, go back to the game last year. I think it was around Christmas time, because it was down at Tottenham away, actually, and I remember watching it on the screen before and thinking, yeah, Newcastle, you know, I think Eddie Howe just come in. Thought, you know, the fans will get them up for it and blah, blah, blah. And I think it ended about 6-0 to Man City. Something along those lines anyway. It is difficult. They're obviously riding the crest of a wave. They had a good result against Forest first game. You know, tricky banana skin potentially there. Get the point at Brighton last week, seemingly undeservedly by the stats, but I haven't seen it. And, you know, stats can paint a different story sometimes.
They haven't had a goal in yet, which is nice. Yeah. If you can do that again, lads, that'd be great. Well, Dan Burn, Shaw, Nick Pope apparently turning into the best goalie in the world. Yeah, do that again, Nick. It'd be great for us.
Well, I think, you know, I looked at that West Ham game, the first game City were playing, and I thought that'll be a difficult game for them. You know, that they'll put pressure on them. And West Ham just ended up just completely sitting off them, and you know they could have got murdered 5-0 to be fair if they'd gone toe to toe, but it was a really conservative performance. And then Scott Parker's Bournemouth weren't going to do anything, so I hope at least, even if they're going to win, I hope that at least they can make it difficult for them. Let's see a bit of what they're made of.
A few niggles sort us out.
And then Chelsea Leeds, I think, will be fascinating. It'll be hostile. They're always at Leeds. Chelsea coming off of this battle at the bridge, make up again very, very intense game. I don't think the Leeds manager is going to be quite as intense as Antonio Conte was. It'll be interesting if he is, but he is a fiery character as well. But again, Leeds, they're the type of team who, again, you call like your tricky ways with hostile atmospheres. Leeds can be. That'll be interesting to see how Chelsea cope in that one.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing any death grips at full time, will we? With
Jesse Ventura,
Tommy Touche. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I think that one, because obviously they've 2-2 with what was the first game week result for Chelsea? I know they drew
1-0.
They beat Everton.
Oh, of course, they did. So yeah, that's not actually a bad start for them. Obviously, a good goal for Koulibaly in the Spurs game. To be fair, and they look like they're decent, but I think like Spurs, like they kind of, we know what Spurs are all about in terms of just like Conte style and just wanting to like diffuse everything.
They get to go first this weekend as well, and it's Wolves at home is one that you'd probably back them to Spurs. Yeah, you'd probably back them to beat Wolves at home, you would think.
Yeah, definitely. I think Wolves are a little bit of a strange team. You know, they used to be a team where they could make it very difficult.
They've just signed the lad that everyone wants to sign.
It's
going to happen though. You're on Saturday. He's going to be brilliant. He's going to score from the halfway line or something.
Getting a favour on that, defo.
Yeah, I've never wanted anyone to be crap more than him, just because Twitter is just going to be unbearable for that time. But no, Wolves used to be a team that could make it very difficult for the top teams. You know, they always took points off Man City. I remember that mad game around Christmas time. You know, we struggled against them at times as well, but I think we always got the results. But nowadays, it just seemed like a little bit, I don't know, neither here nor there. I don't really know what they are. They're trying to be structured. The manager's trying to control everything. But, you know, when you come up against bigger and better teams, then your players kind of need to know what to do in in-game situations. I don't feel like they really do. It could be interesting. You know, half 12, it's going to be difficult for the Spurs players to get up for that, first and foremost. But I do expect them to have 7 points come the end of this weekend.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you there. Right, then, just to let you know, like I say, if you're watching this on YouTube or listen to the podcast, Jürgen Klopp's press conference on Friday, where we will hopefully find out more about Bobby Firmino and every other single injured player that we've got. And there are plenty of them, and God forbid that something else has happened and someone else injured. Anyway, fingers crossed that isn't the case. But yeah, it's every single press conference is available in audio or video form on our for free, completely free on YouTube or free on all podcast apps. And even if you listen to crap podcast apps, we're still on them as well. So just search for the Redmen TV on those, subscribe, and yeah, as soon as the podcast drops with the press conference, it'll be there for you to listen to. Fingers crossed there is no more bad news, Liverpool. Hopefully there's a couple more fit, but we'll soon find out if that's the case. Right then, can't let you go without putting you on the spot. I'll start with you then first, Mick. Manchester United versus Liverpool, give me your score prediction.
I'm going to circle back to what I said at the beginning, like not keeping clean sheets, and I kept saying this for the first two games, like if we keep a clean sheet we'll be alright because we'll score goals, but I think I'm hoping we'll keep a clean sheet and we'll just get rid of that, because I think it's six Premier League games we haven't kept a clean sheet, so I'm hoping this is the game we do. And I'll take a 2-0. To be honest, I'll take a 1-0. Going into the Palace game, I was like, we need 3 points, but we need a performance. And now I'm like of the opinion, like, we just need to get 3 points against these, because it's at Old Trafford. We need to make sure we win this one, not just for bragging rights, but to pal misery on them and for us to get some, build some form, basically.
Yeah, I went to watch You Never Walk Alone, the play with Paul and our two wives yesterday. If you haven't been to the Royal Court and watched that, by the way, feel you really should. Nicky Alt's play. We had him on the podcast last week, if you remember. It's sensational. And one of the bits in it, they talk about when Bill Shankly said about, I think it's the St. John, like, you know, if you're wondering what to do with the ball, just pop it in the net, and we'll talk about the options later. Yeah. For this one, it's very much the same.
Exactly.
Just win the game and we'll box everything up.
Unless you're Andy Robertson, in which case, don't try and pop it in the net. Yeah. Let
someone else do that. Pass it to someone
else. Just whip
it in. Yeah. But yeah, Liverpool on this game might be very much a case of just get the points and we'll box off the performance later. Just win. I'm quite confident in this one, Andy. I'm guessing you are too.
Yeah, I think we are going to win. I think it's going to be a little bit tighter than what people expect. You know, people talk about the confidence that we'll have going into it, and you know, we will feel the pressure, but not as much as them. You know, they've had four of their top players been hooked off at half time. What mind frame are they in going into this game, going in and having to perform? They've gone over to their supporters at full time, and everyone's given them loads. So, you know, however bad mentally in a place Liverpool are, I think United are going to be 10 times worse. So yeah, I expect, you know, Klopp and Pep Linders and the rest of the team have had time to sort of think about what they're going to do with the front three, how they're going to hurt them. And I think they thrive off those kind of challenges and getting those things right. And I think they will. 2-1, I think we'll go 2-0 up, and then they'll get one back, and it'll be a little bit of a nervy one, but we're going to have too much.
I've gone 3-0 for the Reds. We're the Reds in this case. Although we're not going to play in red, we're going to be playing
the
in
whites.
The red,
yeah. disco
disco colours. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think we're going to beat them 3-0. Yeah. I think it's going to be hostile in that place, but for the wrong reasons. Because I think they're going to walk in with a cob on, and we're going to score the first goal this time. And I think the Reds are going to fall off, and the players are going to, their asses are going to fall out. But who knows? Like I say, it's a.
First 15 minutes, we'll see. We'll see what a type of game it's going
to
be straight away.
We need to.
I mean, I keep saying this all the time. We need to start fast. This is a game that it's a must.
If the crowd's here on them, it could get really.
That's what I mean, because it's a double whammy then, because we're 1-0 up and they're going to just.
It's like when Arsenal fans were fuming under Wenger. I mean, when any team scored early on them, they lost their heads. Mm-hmm. And that was actually at the manager. This is owners. It's a bit different. I think they kind of backed Ten Hag. But you can't differentiate when you're angry. You're angry. You don't choose who you're angry at. You're just in a bad mood. Let's keep all those 60,000 odd Manx in a bad mood on Monday night, please. Liverpool. Mick, thanks very much for joining us. Andy, thanks very much for joining us as well. Thanks all you guys for watching or listening to the Build Up Show. Like I say, over the weekend, tons and tons more content for free on the YouTube channel and the podcast apps, and of course, even more on Redmen Plus as well. So I'm gonna say the Liverpool Library that I spoke about earlier, that's streaming now. As is JNO Insight with Neil Jones. Someone in the chat asked before about Naby Keita. That gets all discussed in that show as well. So yeah, tons of you available before Monday. And then on Monday itself, we'll have another watch along live from the studio. Mute the TV, put me and Paul on, listen to our commentary, and hopefully cheer Liverpool on to three very much needed points. Until then, I'll catch you all later. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for that. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want more Red Men in your ears, then consider signing up to redmenplus.com. You get everything that's on the website in video, and if you want it, in podcast form. From £5 a month, redmenplus.com, you get two free items of merchandise every single season. If you sign up as a club legend, you get 20% discount codes every single month, exclusive discounts from our partners, as well as your name in the credits and each and every Red Men Plus show.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. it'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.